Stefan Medley sat on the grimy bed in the dimly lit room, staring at nothing. He'd been sitting there ever since Roxanne left. He'd tried to work out what he was going to do next, but he couldn't seem to concentrate on anything. In the space of a few moments, his world had collapsed, and he was left alone in a filthy little tavern he wouldn't have been seen dead in by daylight. It hadn't seemed so bad when he was there with Roxanne. They only had eyes for each other then. Now he could see how cheap and shabby it really was, just like him. He rubbed his aching temples and tried to think. He wasn't safe as long as he stayed in Haven. Adamant would have no choice but to believe he'd defected to the other side, and Adamant was a first-class duelist. Even assuming Adamant wouldn't kill a man who'd once been his friend, there were certainly many in the reform cause with ready swords and no love for traitors.
Traitor. It is a harsh word, but it's the only one that fits.
Hardcastle would be after him too as soon as Roxanne revealed he wasn't going to defect. He'd insulted Hardcastle too many times, frustrated his plans too often, and Hardcastle carried grudges as if by duty.
What are my odds of escaping Haven at all? Where would I go? Haven's a cesspool of depravity. But Haven is my home. Everyone I know, everything I have is here.
But it was gone now. He threw it away for the love of a woman who didn't love him. His friends would disown him. His career was over. His future... Medley lowered his head into his hands. He would have liked to cry, but he was too numb for tears.
Roxanne.
What a difference she had made in his life. Roxanne, bright and wild and funny and free, just being with her made him feel alive in a way unknown to him. He could talk to her, tell her things he never told anyone else. He never in his life felt so happy as in the few precious moments he'd shared with her.
What a fool. I should have known a living legend like Roxanne couldn't truly see anything in a nobody like me. She's so beautiful and famous. She can have anyone she wants. Another hero or legend. Someone who matters. Not me. Not some hanger-on in a city full of them. What was I thinking?
No one had ever cared for him before. Not really. Not in the way of a man with a woman. He hadn't realized how bleak and lonely his life had been until she was there to share it with him. She'd made him feel alive, and now she was gone. And Medley sat utterly alone.
Alone.
He never knew how final that word sounded. It seemed to echo on in his mind as he saw his future spread out before him. There was no hope for him now. Medley's hope burned in the cauldron of deceit. His path led through a desert of despair. But there was still one thing he could do. One last thing that might win him some rest, some peace. Perhaps then his friends would realize how much he regretted the harm he'd done them. Medley drew the knife from his boot. It was a short knife, barely 6 inches long, but it had a good blade and a sharp edge. It would do the job. He sat on the edge of the bed for a long time, staring at the knife. He thought about what he was going to do very carefully. It was the last important thing he would ever do, and he didn't want to make a mess of it. He put the knife down beside him on the bed and rolled up his sleeves. The flesh of his arms seemed very pale and very vulnerable. He stared at his arms for a while. The long blue veins and the sprinkling of hairs fascinated him, as though he'd never seen them before. He picked up the knife and automatically stropped the blade against his trouser leg to clean it. He realized what he was doing and smiled, as if that mattered now. He held the knife against his left wrist and then had to stop because his hands were shaking too much. Goose flesh sprang up on his arms. He concentrated, summoning his courage, and his hands grew steady again. The blade shone dully in the lamplight. He pressed the knife into his flesh, and the skin parted easily under the blade. Blood welled up, and he bit his lip at the sharp pain. He gritted his teeth and pulled the knife across his wrist. The pain was awful. He could feel the tendons popping as they pulled apart under the blade. Blood spurted out into the air. He quickly grabbed the knife in his left hand, before the feeling could leave his fingers, and slashed at the veins in his right wrist. His arm wavered, and he had to cut twice more before he was sure he'd done a good enough job. The knife slipped out of his fingers and fell to the floor. The blood pumped out surprisingly quickly, and he began to feel faint and dizzy. He dropped back on the bed, squeezing his eyes shut against the horrid pain that burned all the way up his arms to his elbows. He hadn't thought it would hurt so much. He held his mouth firmly closed. He couldn't afford to make any noise. Someone might hear him and come to help. He began to feel sick. He couldn't stop crying. This wasn't how he'd thought it would be, but he wasn't surprised, not really. He should have known he wouldn't even be allowed to leave his life with a little dignity. He could see his fingers flexing spasmodically, but he couldn't feel them any longer. The blood still flowed. It soaked the bedding around his arms. So much blood. He looked up at the ceiling and then closed his eyes for the last time.
I loved you, Roxanne. Oh, how I loved you.
Roxanne was furious, and the mercenaries were keeping their distance. Pike and Da Silva disappeared the moment they reached Hardcastle's safe house, ostensibly to lock Fisher safely away, but actually to get out of Roxanne's reach until she calmed down a little and took her hand away from her sword belt.
I can't believe it.
Roxanne paced back and forth, growling and muttering to herself. She'd never felt so angry, and what made it worse was that she wasn't all that sure what she was so angry about. Part of it came from losing so many men to Adamant's sorcerer. If she hadn't insisted on full magical protection from Wolf for herself and Pike and Da Silva, she and they would have died along with her men. Roxanne hated losing men. She took it personally. Some of her anger came not from having taken Hawk as well as Fisher. She'd vowed to take them both, and she hated to fail at things she'd set her word to. Legends can't afford to fail. If they do, they stop being legends. But most of her anger came from how they'd taken Fisher. She'd been looking forward to crossing swords with the legendary Captain Fisher ever since she came to Haven. And in the end, somebody struck the guard down from behind while she wasn't looking.
Ugh! That is no way to beat a legend!
Winning that way made Roxanne feel cheap, like just another paid killer.
And he won't let me kill Fisher cleanly.
Hardcastle specifically ordered Fisher was to be kept alive for interrogation.
I know a euphemism for torture when I hear it.
She glared as she paced, and the mercenaries avoided her gaze. The safe house was a dump, a decaying fire trap in the middle of a row of low-rent tenements, typical of Hardcastle and his operations. Cheap and nasty. All in all, the whole operation put a bad taste in Roxanne's mouth. She was a warrior, and this kind of dirty political fighting didn't sit well with her. Roxanne had killed and tortured before, and delighted in the blood, but that was in the heat of battle, where courage and steel decided warriors' fates, not dirty little schemes and backroom politics. If anyone had ever accused Roxanne of being honorable, she'd have laughed in their faces, but this whole mess just stank to high heaven.
What would Medley think of all this?
She pushed the thought firmly to one side. She stopped pacing. The breathing calmed her a little, and she took her hand away from her sword. The mercenaries began to breathe a little more easily and stopped judging the distances to possible exits. Pike and Da Silva chose that moment to reappear. Roxanne glared at them.
Well?
Sleeping like a baby. But we've tied her hand and foot just in case.
I'll take a quick look at her, and then I'd better report back to Hardcastle. He'll need to know what's happened. You two, stay here.
Pike and Da Silva nodded quickly and watched in silence as Roxanne disappeared into the adjoining room where they'd dumped Fisher. They waited until the door swung shut behind her and then looked at each other.
She's getting out of control. If I didn't know better, I'd swear she was developing scruples.
Still, Hardcastle knew there was a risk in using Roxanne for political work. Everyone knows Roxanne's crazy. It doesn't matter on the battlefield, but we can't have her running wild in Haven. She knows too much.
So she's expendable?
Everyone's expendable in politics, especially her. That's official from Hardcastle.
Which of us gets to kill her?
I wasn't thinking of fighting a duel with her. I was thinking more along the lines of dosing her wine with a fast-acting poison, waiting until she's collapsed, and then cutting her head off. There's a good price for her head in the Low Kingdoms.
Sounds good to me.
Roxanne stood just inside the doorway of the adjoining room, listening. She'd always had good hearing. It kept her alive on battlefields more than once. She knew Pike and Da Silva were up to something, but the casualness with which they discussed her death made her blood boil. The orders must have come from Hardcastle. They wouldn't dare make such a decision themselves.
So, Hardcastle sold me out to a couple of back-alley assassins.
She wanted to just charge out into the next room, draw her sword, and cut them both down. But even she wasn't crazy enough to take on 22 armed men in a confined space. She hadn't made her reputation as a warrior by being stupid. She had to get out of there and think things over. Roxanne threw the door open and stalked back into the main room and pretended not to notice the sudden silence.
I'm going to see Hardcastle. Keep a close eye on Fisher, but don't damage her any further. Hardcastle's going to want that privilege for himself.
She nodded briskly to Pike and Da Silva and headed for the door before they could come up with some excuse to stop her. Her back crawled in anticipation of an attack, her ears straining for any hint of steel being drawn from a scabbard. But nothing happened.
All right, Roxanne, what do you do next? I'll be damned if I keep working for Hardcastle, but I can't just walk out on him either. I got a reputation to maintain.
But she couldn't let Hardcastle get away with threatening her either. That would do her reputation even more damage. She scowled as she strode along, and people all around her hurried to get out of her way. All this thinking made her head hurt. She needed someone she could talk to, someone she could trust. But she'd never trusted anyone.
I wish Stefan were here.
The thought surprised her, as did the warmth of feeling that went through her at the thought of seeing him again. Stefan was a good sort for a politician. He understood things like honesty and honor.
I'll go see him. He's probably still mad. But we'll work something out.
She headed back to the tavern where she'd left him. The tavern was full of customers. Smoke hung heavy in the air, casting a haze over the happy reform crowd. Roxanne made her way to the bar, elbowing people out of her way. Roxanne leaned across the bar, grabbed the bartender by the shirt front, and pulled his face close to hers. Before he could object, the bartender realized who she was and went very pale.
Stefan Medley. The man I came here with. Where did he go after he left here?
He didn't go anywhere. He's still in his room.
Roxanne frowned, dropped the bartender, and turned away. What the hell was Stefan doing hanging around here? He must know the reformers would already be hot on his trail, and it wouldn't take them long to find out about this place. Medley had always been careful about their assignations here, but Roxanne deliberately left clues all over the place. That was part of her job. Then... She shook her head. The sooner she talked to Stefan and got the hell out of here, the better. She hurried up the stairs behind the bar, taking the steps two at a time. Everything would be all right once she'd talked to Stefan. He'd know what to do. He always did. The door to their room was locked. Roxanne looked quickly around, knocked twice, and waited impatiently. There was no sound from inside the room.
Stefan! He must be in there. The door is still locked. Stefan!
Roxanne began to get a bad feeling about the room. Something was wrong. Maybe the reformers had already caught up with him. She drew her sword. The door shuddered, but held.
Damn door!
The crude lock broke, and the door swung inward. The room behind was dark and quiet. Roxanne moved quickly into the room and darted to one side so that she wouldn't be caught silhouetted against the light from the open door. She stood poised in the gloom, sword at the ready, but it only took her a few moments to realize there were no ambushers in the room. She put away her sword and lit one of the lamps. Light filled the room, and for a moment all Roxanne could see was the blood. It covered the bedclothes and had spilled down the sides to form pools on the floor. Some of it had already dried. Roxanne moved forward quietly and felt for a pulse on Medley's neck. It was still there, slow and feeble, but his skin was deathly cold. At first, she thought the reformers had got to him. And then she looked at his arms and saw the ugly black wounds at his wrists. Her breath caught in her throat as she realized what he'd done and why. She turned and ran from the room. She hurried back down the stairs and into the bar, fought her way through the crowd, and grabbed the bartender again.
I need a healer.
now.
There's a Northern witch on the first floor. Calls herself Vienna. She knows a few things. She's all there is. Unless you want me to send her for someone?
No. You don't talk to anyone about this. You do, and I'll gut you. Which room is she in?
Room 9. Just around the corner from the stairs. You can't miss it.
Roxanne dropped the bartender and ran back up the stairs. It didn't take her long to find room 9, but it seemed like ages. The door opened a crack, and a suspicious eye looked out at her.
Who is it? What do you want?
I need a healer.
I don't do abortions.
Roxanne grabbed a handful of the woman's gown and slammed her up against the wall. She struggled feebly, her feet now swinging helplessly several inches above the floor. Roxanne thrust her face up close to the witch's. The witch went very quiet and stopped struggling.
A friend of mine is hurt. Dying. Save his life or I'll kill you. Slowly. Now move!
She put Vienna down and hauled her up the stairs to the next floor in Medley's room. Vienna took one look at the blood and started to leave, then stopped as she met Roxanne's gaze. The witch was a tiny, frail little thing in a shabby green dress. Any other time, Roxanne might have felt guilty about bullying her, but this was different. All she could think of was Stefan, dying alone in a dirty tavern room because of her. She gestured curtly at Medley, and Vienna turned back and examined his wrists.
Nasty. But you were in luck, warrior. He didn't make a very good job of it. He cut across the veins instead of lengthwise. The blood's been able to clot and close off the wounds. He has lost a lot of blood, though.
Can you save him?
I think so. A simple healing spell on the wrists and another to speed up production of new blood.
She started moving her limbs in a technical manner Roxanne didn't understand. She just let the witch work, unable to concentrate on anything but the great wave of relief surging through her. Stefan wasn't going to die. He wasn't going to die because of her. She nodded harshly to Vienna, and the witch continued her magic. The rites were simple and rather unpleasant, but very effective. The torn flesh at the wrists closed together and fused, and faint tinges of color began to seep back into Medley's face. His breathing became steadier and deeper.
That's all I can do. Let him rest for a couple of days and I'll be as good as new. Keeping him alive is your problem. Those cuts on his wrists were deep. They meant business.
Yes, I know.
Roxanne untied the purse from her belt and tossed it to Vienna without checking to see how much was in it.
Not a word to anyone.
The witch nodded and left quickly before Roxanne could change her mind. Roxanne sat on the edge of the bed beside Medley, ignoring the blood that soaked into her trousers. Stefan looked drawn and tired, as though he'd been through a long fever. She let her hand rest on his forehead for a moment. The flesh felt cool and dry.
What am I going to say to you, Stefan? I never thought you'd do anything like this. You were just a job to me, but I liked you, Stefan. Why did you have to do this?
Why not?
Roxanne poured him a glass of water from the pitcher on the table and held the glass to his mouth while he drank. He managed a few swallows and she put the glass down. Medley lifted his arms and looked at the healed wounds on his wrists. He smiled sourly and let his arms fall back onto the bed.
You shouldn't have bothered, Roxanne. I'll only have to do it again.
Don't you dare. I can't go through all of this again. My nerves won't stand it. Why did you do it, Stefan?
It's not enough just to live. You have to have something to live for. Something or someone. For a while I had politics, and when I grew tired of that, I found Adamant. He needed me, made me feel important and valued, made me his friend. But even at its best, I was just living someone else's life, following someone else's lead. And then I met you, and you gave my life meaning. I was so happy with you. You were all the things that had been missing from my life. You made me feel that I mattered, and that I was someone in my own right, not just someone else's shadow. And then you told me it was all a lie, and walked out of my life. I can't go back to being what I was, Roxanne. I'd rather die than do that. I love you. And if what we had was just a lie, then I prefer that lie to truth. Even if I have to die to keep it.
No one ever felt that way for me before. I'm going to have to think about that. But I promise you this, Stefan. I'll stay with you for as long as you need me. I'm not sure why, but you're important to me too.
Medley looked at her for a long moment.
If this is just another game you're playing, a way to get more information out of me, I don't mind. Just tell me what you want to know, and I'll tell you. But don't pretend you care for me if you don't. Please, can't go through that again.
No. No, Stefan. Hardcastle can go stuff himself. Things will be different from now on.
I love you. How do you feel about me?
Damned if I know.
Hawk was tired, and his arm and back muscles ached from too much use and too little rest. During the past hour, he'd been through half the dives in the steps, looking for a lead on Fisher. No one knew anything, no matter how forcefully he put the question. Eventually, he came to the reluctant belief that they were telling the truth. And that only left one place to look. Brimstone Hall, Hardcastle's home. He stood outside the great iron gates and stared past the two nervous men-at-arms on duty. The old hall looked quiet and almost deserted, with light showing at only a few windows. Somewhere in there he'd find what he was looking for, someone or something that would put him on the right trail. The two men-at-arms looked at each other uncertainly but said nothing. They recognized Hawk and knew what he was capable of. They hadn't missed the fresh blood dripping from the axe in his right hand. Hawk ignored them, concentrating on the hall. Hardcastle and his people would be out on the streets now, so the chances were good he'd only have to face a skeleton staff. Maybe he'd get really lucky and find Isabel locked away in some cellar here. He remembered the way she'd looked as she'd been dragged away, bloody and unconscious, and the slow, cold rage began to build in him again. He shifted his gaze to the two men-at-arms, and they stirred uneasily.
Open the gates.
Hardcastle isn't here. Everyone's out.
Somebody will talk to me.
Not to you, Captain Hawk. We have our orders. You're not to be allowed entrance under any circumstances. As far as you're concerned, everyone's out and always will be.
Open the gates.
One of the men approached the gate, feeling confident that the bars would protect him.
Get lost. You've no business here.
Hawk quickly put the haft of his axe through the bars of the gate and hit him low, well below the belt.
He doubled up and fell writhing to the ground. The other man-at-arms backed quickly away. Hawk pushed the gates open, stepped over the man on the ground, and entered the grounds of Brimstone Hall. The man-at-arms left standing took one look at Hawk's face and turned and ran for the hall. Hawk went after him at a steady walk along the gravel path. No point in hurrying. No one was going anywhere. Hawk looked around to see three huge dogs chasing towards him. He studied them carefully. Hardcastle's dogs were supposed to be man-killers and man-eaters, but they looked ordinary enough to Hawk. He took a bag of powder from his belt and opened it. He held his breath and threw the powder into the air right in front of the dogs. The dogs skidded to a halt, sniffed suspiciously at the air, and then sat down suddenly with big, sloppy grins on their faces. Hawk waited a moment to be sure the dust had done its job, then walked cautiously past them. Two of the dogs ignored him completely, and the third rolled over on its back so that Hawk could rub its belly. Hawk smiled slightly, careful not to breathe till he was well past the dogs. He knew the second bag of dust he found in Danielle's room would come in handy. Hawk headed for the hall. Everything seemed quiet. He'd almost reached the main door when it suddenly swung open before him, and five men-at-arms in full chainmail spilled out to block his path. Hawk smiled at them and held his bloody axe so they could see it clearly.
Where is she? Where's Hardcastle keeping my wife?
The foremost guard eyed Hawk.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I'm Brond. I speak for Hardcastle in his absence, and he doesn't want to speak to you. You better leave now. You're already in a lot of trouble.
Last chance. Where's my wife?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Brond half turned away and addressed the other men.
Throw him out! Don't be gentle about it. Show the man what happens when he messes with his betters. Home.
Hawk slammed his axe into Bronn's side. The heavy steel head punched clean through Bronn's chainmail and buried itself in his ribcage. Bronn stood and stared at it for a moment, unable to believe what had happened, then fell to his knees as Hawk jerked his axe free. As Bronn collapsed, the four remaining men-at-arms jumped Hawk as another four dashed into the fight from the house. Then suddenly there was another figure fighting at his side, tall and lithe and very deadly. Two men-at-arms fell to the newcomer's blade in as many seconds. Hawk cut down a third, and suddenly the men-at-arms scattered and ran for their lives. Hawk slowly lowered his axe and turned to face Roxanne. For a long moment, they stood looking at each other, and then Roxanne lowered her sword.
All right, what's going on?
We've come to help.
Medley approached the two of them cautiously.
We know where your wife is. We can take you right to her.
Why should I trust you? You both work for Hardcastle.
Not anymore. He broke his contract with me. And Stefan never worked for him.
Besides, without our help, you haven't a hope of finding and rescuing your wife.
That's a good reason.
He hesitated and then put his axe away. Roxanne sheathed her sword. The three of them walked back through the grounds to the main gates. They had to go slowly so that Medley could keep up with them. Hawk looked at him more closely.
You don't look too good, Medley. Are you sure you're up to this?
He's been ill. He's fine now.
Hawk looked at them both and then let the matter drop. There was obviously a story there, but it could wait.
You haven't said what you expect to get out of this.
A dropping of any and all charges against us. A clean slate.
All right. You help me rescue Isabel and I'll come through for you. But if I even suspect you're trying to set me up, I'll kill you both. Deal?
How could we refuse?
Deal.
The room had no windows or other light, and Fisher screwed up her eyes at the sudden flare. She'd been awake for some time, but alone in the dark, she had no way of telling how long. Her head ached fiercely, and she knew she was lucky not to have a concussion. There were cramps in her arms from being tied behind her, and her hands were numb because the ropes at her wrists were too tight. Her ankles were hobbled, and there was no sign of her sword. All in all, she'd been in better condition. She struggled to sit upright and looked at the two men standing by the door. They closed it carefully behind them, and from the way they looked at her, she had a good idea of what they had in mind. A sudden horror gripped her, and she had to grit her teeth to stop her mouth from trembling. She'd faced death before, been hurt so many times she'd lost count of the scars, but this was different. She'd thought about rape. She supposed every woman had, but she'd never really thought it would happen to her. Not to her, not to Captain of the Guard, Fisher, the warrior. She was too strong, too good with a sword, too determined to protect herself for anything like that to happen to her. Only now, her sword was gone, the strength had been knocked out of her, and determination on its own wasn't going to be enough to protect her. She bit down firmly on her growing panic. She had to keep her wits about her and watch for a chance to thwart them. If all else failed, there was always revenge. The room had no windows or other light, and Fisher screwed up her eyes at the sudden glare from the lamp carried by two men. Pike put the lamp into a niche high up on the wall. He could feel Fisher watching him. He moved unhurriedly towards her. Her eyes were steady, but just a bit too wide. He grinned, knelt down beside her, and put one hand on her thigh. In spite of herself, Fisher shrank away from his touch.
No need to worry, Captain.
Pike gave her thigh a little squeeze, just hard enough to let her feel the strength in his hand.
My friend and I won't hurt you, as long as you behave yourself. No. You just be nice and cooperative and show us a nice time, and you don't have to get hurt at all. Of course, if you're determined to be unpleasant about it, my friend De Silva here knows some very nasty tricks with a skinning knife. Isn't that right, De Silva?
Right.
Fisher's eyes darted to De Silva, then away.
I'm Captain of the Guard. If anything happens to me, you'll be in real trouble.
Oh, that's out there. Things like that don't matter in here. In here, there's just you and us.
My husband will track me down. You've heard of Hawk, haven't you?
Sure. We're waiting for him. He's good, but so are we. And there are a lot more of us than there is of him.
Fisher thought frantically.
There was the sound of truth and confidence in his voice, and that frightened her more than anything. They didn't just want her, they wanted Hawk as well.
All right, I won't fight you, just don't hurt me. Why not untie me? I could be more cooperative then.
Fisher could feel blood running down her chin from her crushed mouth. She gritted her teeth against the pain and the dizziness. She'd been hurt worse in her time, but this kind of cold and casual violence was new to her, and all the more intimidating because of her utter helplessness.
That's for thinking we're stupid. If I untie your hands, I'm a dead man. You're not going to get that chance, Captain.
Pike drew a knife from his boot. But he only used it to cut the ropes, binding her ankles together. De Silva moved quickly in to hold her ankles while Pike put away his knife. Fisher's heart raced. Pike put a hand on her breast and pushed her so that she fell onto her back. He began to undo his trousers. Fisher struggled to sit upright again, as though that could somehow put off the inevitable. Pike leaned forward and grabbed her hair, tilting her head back. He held her head steady as he put his face down to kiss her. Fisher sank her teeth into his lower lip. Her teeth met, and she jerked her head back, taking most of Pike's lip with her. Blood ran from his mouth, and for a moment, the pain and shock held him rigid. Fisher spat out the lip. Fisher snapped her head forward in a savage butt to Pike's face. Pike fell backward against De Silva, sending him sprawling. Fisher scrambled to her feet while De Silva pushed Pike aside and struggled up onto his knees. Fisher stepped forward and kicked De Silva squarely in the groin, putting all her weight behind it. De Silva fell forward onto the floor, clutching at the awful pain between his legs. Pike rolled back and forth on the floor with both his hands at his face, unable to think straight for the pain. Fisher kicked him solidly in the head. Fisher turned quickly to find De Silva back on his feet. He crouched around his pain, but he held a knife in his hand, and his eyes were cold and angry. Fisher backed away, and De Silva feinted at her with his knife. She stepped quickly inside his reach while he was off balance and kicked him in the knee. De Silva fell forward as his leg collapsed under him, and Fisher's knee came up and caught him squarely on the chin. De Silva's head snapped back, and he fell limply to the floor and lay still. Fisher slumped back against the cold stone wall, shaking violently. Her head ached so badly she could barely think, but she knew she couldn't stop and rest. If the other mercenaries heard anything of the fight, they might decide to see what was happening, and she was in no condition to take on anyone else. She got down on her knees and groped around on the floor until she found the knife De Silva had dropped. All she had to do now was cut the bonds at her wrists, which were knotted in the middle of her back where she couldn't see them, and then work out a plan that would get her out of here without having to take on however many other mercenaries were waiting in the next room. Fisher smiled sourly and concentrated on cutting the ropes and not her arms. One thing at a time. Hawk looked calmly about him, as though he couldn't feel the point of Roxanne's sword digging into his back. It occurred to him that if he'd misjudged the situation, he was in a whole lot of trouble. There were 12 mercenaries in the room, some carrying weapons, some not. According to Roxanne, there were more mercenaries up on the next floor. So assume 20 men, all told. 10-1 odds.
I've faced worse.
One of the mercenaries walked over to him. Tall, muscular, chainmail, wore a sword and a battered scabbard and looked like he knew how to use it. Regular issue mercenary. He nodded briefly to Roxanne and looked Hawk up and down.
So this is a famous Captain Hawk. Do come in, Captain. Don't stand on ceremony. You know, Captain, Hardcastle's just dying to see you. As for you, you're just dying.
Where's my wife?
The mercenary backhanded Hawk across the face. He saw it coming, but still couldn't ride much of the blow. His head rang, and Hawk swayed unsteadily on his feet for a moment.
You speak when you're spoken to, Captain. I can see we're gonna have to teach you some manners before we let you meet Counselor Hardcastle. But don't worry about your wife. We haven't forgotten her. Even as we speak, she's being entertained by two of our men. I'm sure they're giving her a real good time.
Hawk kneed him in the groin. The mercenary bent forward around his pain. Hawk rabbit punched him on the way to the floor.
Nighthawk snatched his axe from Medley.
Roxanne, guard my back.
The back door to the room burst open, and Fisher flew into the room, sword in hand. Hawk smiled. All this time, he'd been worried about Fisher, and here she was, safe and sound. He should have known. She seemed a little startled to see Roxanne guarding his back, but she quickly set about carving a path through the mercenaries to reach him. Hawk swung his axe double-handed, and blood splashed across the filthy floor. The heavy steel blade easily deflected the lighter swords and punched through chainmail as though it wasn't there. Fisher fought at his side, her sword a steel blur as she cut and parried and thrust. Roxanne laughed and danced and cut her way through her fellow mercenaries with a deadly glee. Medley stayed out of the way. He knew his limitations. Roxanne moved among her former companions with neither mercy nor compassion, and none of them could stand against her. She killed them with professionalism and style, and the blood sang in her head. Suddenly, the mercenaries broke and ran, even though they still outnumbered their attackers. Pike and Da Silva might have been able to rally them, but without their leaders, the mercenaries hadn't the nerve to face three living legends. Hawk looked around the suddenly empty room and lowered his axe. He was almost disappointed the fight was over so soon. He had a lot of pent-up anger to work off. Hawk turned, smiling, to Fisher, and his anger turned suddenly cold and merciless as he saw what they'd done to her. Her mouth was bruised and swollen, and blood from a nasty cut on her scalp had spilled down one side of her face. He took her in his arms and held her tightly, and she hugged him back as if she would never let him go. Hawk and Fisher broke apart. Fisher looked at Medley and then at Roxanne.
They're on our side?
Don't ask. It gets complicated.
That's politicians and mercenaries for you. Let's hope Adamant's the forgiving kind. There are two more mercenaries in the other room. Out cold. We're taking them with us. I'll be pressing charges.
Hawk caught some of the undertones in her voice.
Are you all right, Isabel?
Sure. I'm fine now.
The election was almost over, and Hardcastle was hosting a victory party in his ballroom. The faithful had come by the hundreds to share his hospitality and celebrate another conservative victory in the steps. Hardcastle looked out over the milling crowd and smiled graciously at his favorites. People came to congratulate him and politely remind him of all their labors on his behalf. Hardcastle had a smile and a nod for all of them, but his mind was elsewhere. The voting had to be nearly over by now. But so far, he'd heard no news from the polls. None of his people had reported back, and Wolf had locked himself away in his room. Of course, he was bound to win. He always did. But the complete lack of news worried him. There was no word on Hawk and Fisher, though they should have been captured or killed by now. There was no word at all from Pike or Da Silva, and Roxanne had disappeared. No one had seen or heard from her for hours. Hardcastle scowled. Something was wrong. He could feel it in his bones. But there was still one source of information open to him. He gestured to one of his servants.
Fetch Wolf!
The servant hesitated, but one look at Hardcastle's face convinced him there was no point in protesting. He bowed quickly and left the ballroom. Hardcastle looked around him, and his scowl deepened. The party seemed as loud and cheerful as ever, but somehow the mood didn't feel right. The laughter was too loud, the smiles too forced. Here and there, there were pockets of quiet, almost furtive talk. Hardcastle frowned. He had to give them some positive news soon, or their nerves would crack. Everywhere he looked, he seemed to see worried faces with wide, desperate eyes. His guests looked more and more like wild animals gathered together, sensing a storm in the air. Wolf entered the ballroom, and a sudden silence spread quickly across the guests. Wolf walked slowly forward, and the crowd drew back from him so that he walked alone. He wore his long black sorcerer's cloak wrapped tightly about his slender frame. The cowl had been pulled forward to hide his face. He came to a halt before Hardcastle, and the cowled head bowed slightly. A sudden chill swept through Hardcastle like an awful premonition, and he fought to keep it out of his face. He smiled at Wolf and gestured for the musicians to begin playing again. Hardcastle glanced at his wife, standing silently beside him as always. She was staring at the floor, her face calm and impassive.
Jillian, move back.
She stepped back a few paces without looking up. Hardcastle fixed his gaze on Wolf. There were things he had to discuss with the sorcerer, and he didn't want any witnesses, not even Jillian.
All right, Wolf, what's going on? You've been cowering in your room ever since we got back from the Street of Gods. What's the matter with you?
It's the bee, the abomination. The Lord of Chaos. I didn't understand. I couldn't understand what it was. What it meant.
Pull yourself together, man. I need information. I need to know what's happening in the city. What are the results? What's Adamant up to? Why haven't I heard from my people? Damn it! Use your magic and tell me what's happening.
I can't. He's too strong. I can feel him growing.
You told me you could control him. You told me that hosting that thing would make you so powerful, no one could stand against us.
You don't understand. The Lord of Ghosts isn't some demon or elemental to be bent to my will by magic. The Abomination is one of the transient beings, an aspect of reality given shape and form by men's perception. A single concept given flesh and blood and bone. It isn't real, as we understand the term. These are things that live outside the world, in the spaces between spaces, and they hunger for strange and altered things. I thought I could control it while it was still weak and confused from its long sleep, but it's so powerful. I could feel it in my mind, clawing at the walls I built to hold it. It's going to get out, Cameron.
We can talk about this later. Now get a hold of yourself. You're supposed to be a top-ranked sorcerer. Act like one. I must have information, Wolf. I need to know what's happening out there on the streets. Use your magic to locate my people and tell me what's happening in the election. That's an order.
For a long moment, Wolf just stood, head bowed, and Hardcastle began to think the sorcerer was going to defy him. But finally, Wolf nodded slightly.
The mercenaries you sent after Captains Hawk and Fisher are either dead or scattered. Their leaders, Pike and De Silva, are under arrest. They have agreed to give evidence against you in return for lesser sentences. The voting is almost over. Adamant is winning.
Hardcastle stood very still. At first, there was only disbelief and shock, but both gradually gave way to a cold and vicious anger.
How dare they? How dare they turn against me and elect Adamant? They've forgotten who runs the high steps? Well, I'll remind them. I'll teach the reformers a lesson they'll never forget.
Hardcastle glared at Wolf.
You are my man, Wolf. Bound to me by vows sealed in blood.
Yes, Cameron. I am yours to command.
Then use this great power of yours. Go to Adamant House and kill him. Kill him and every person there.
That may not be wise, Cameron. You need me here. Without my magic to augment and magnify your presence, you won't be able to control your followers with your speeches anymore.
Ah, I was making speeches long before I had your magic to back me up. I can deal with my people. They'll do as they're told, as always. You have your orders, Wolf. Kill Adamant and everyone with him.
Cameron, please. The Abomination.
Obey me!
Wolf put back his head. His cowl fell back, revealing what was left of his face. All the flesh was gone, devoured by some hideous internal hunger. There was only a grinning skull, barely covered by skin stretched tight across the bone like splitting parchment. His eyes were gone, the sockets raw and bloody. He rose up into the air, his body twitching with awkward, ungainly movements that suggested the form inside the black robe was no longer entirely human. He disappeared. Hardcastle smiled. With Adamant and all his people dead, there would have to be another election in the steps, but no one would dare stand against him. People would talk, but no one would be able to prove anything. He would be counselor again, and then he'd make the scum in the streets pay for daring to defy him. Medley hesitated outside the door to Adamant's study. He glanced at Roxanne, who nodded encouragingly. Hawk and Fisher stood back a few paces, keeping a tactful distance. Medley was glad of their company, but if he was going to make his peace with Adamant, he had to do it on his own.
Come in.
Opening the door and walking in was one of the hardest things Medley had ever done. Adamant sat behind his desk, with Danielle standing beside him. They both looked tired, and there were lines in their faces Medley had never seen before. Adamant gestured, and Medley sat down on the chair facing the desk. Roxanne leaned against the doorframe, her thumbs tucked into her sword belt, her eyes bright and watchful. Hawk and Fisher stayed near the doorway. Silence filled the room, an almost palpable presence filled with words no one wanted to say, but that couldn't be ignored. Everyone looked at Hawk.
With your permission, Sir Adamant, Isabel and I will take a look around the house and make sure everything's secure.
Of course, Captain. I'll call if I need you.
Adamant's voice was as calm as ever, but his gaze never left Medley. Hawk and Fisher left the study.
The house seems very quiet. What happened to the victory party?
I canceled it. It didn't seem right with so many people dead.
I should have known about Longarm's attack. My intelligence people provided enough hints, but I was too engrossed with Roxanne, and I didn't put the pieces together in time. I'm sorry, James. How many of our men-at-arms were hurt?
27 dead, 14 wounded. Luckily, none of the guests got hurt.
Adamant looked at Roxanne.
So, this is your mysterious girlfriend?
Yes. Isn't she splendid?
I suppose that's one way of describing her. The last time I saw her, she was cutting down my people and showing them no quarter.
Roxanne met his gaze calmly.
That's my job. I'm good at it.
You killed Bearclaw and Kincaid. They were good men.
They would have killed me, given the chance. That's how they play politics in this city. You know that.
Yes. Murder and betrayal have always been popular in Haven.
For what it's worth, Stefan didn't betray you. Pumping him for information was part of my job, and he was so besotted with me he never even noticed. He told me all kinds of useful things without even realizing, and I passed them on to Hardcastle.
Does he know you're here?
No. I don't work for him anymore.
Why not?
He broke our contract.
Danielle looked from him to Medley and back again.
Is that the only reason? What about you and Stefan?
I don't know. We're just taking things one day at a time and seeing what happens.
Adamant leaned forward in his chair and fixed Medley with his gaze.
What are you doing here, Stefan? What do you want from me? Forgiveness? Your old job back?
Damned if I know, James. I'm sorry you were hurt. I'm sorry people died. But I never meant for any of that to happen. I loved Roxanne, and nothing else seemed to matter.
How do you feel about her now? Knowing what she is, what she's done. Do you forgive her?
Of course. I love her in spite of everything. I hope you understand that.
Adamant looked at Danielle and put out a hand to hold hers.
Yes, I understand.
Hawk and Fisher prowled restlessly through the empty house. The rooms felt strange and deserted, and the quiet possessed a texture of its own. They went from room to room, but there was no sign of any life. Adamant's people were either dead or evacuated, and the guests long gone. Nothing remained to mark Longarm's assault, save for a few patches of dried blood here and there, and the contents of the downstairs library. Hawk found them quite by accident. He pushed open the library door on his way back down the hall and stopped dead in his tracks at the sight of the bodies. There were 27 of them altogether. Hawk counted them twice to make sure. All of Adamant's men who died at the hands of the militants. They'd been stacked together like bundles of kindling, face to face, arms and legs neatly arranged. Hawk felt strangely angry at the sight. These men had died for Adamant. They deserved a more dignified rest than this.
They'll get one. But things have been rather rushed here of late. I did the best I could.
Hawk looked at Fisher and saw that she had heard it too.
So you're still here, Sorcerer?
Of course. Where else would I be?
What happened to the bodies of the people who did this? Longarm and his militants?
I disposed of them.
Hawk decided not to press the question any further. He didn't think he really wanted to know.
Get back to Adamant. He's going to need you.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
Why? What's happening?
Something's coming.
What? What's coming?
Something's coming.
Hawk drew his axe and Fisher drew her sword, and they ran back to the entry hall. They could see the study door standing open. Everything seemed quiet.
Mortis!
Adamant came out of the study, his face grim.
You hurt him too?
Yeah, I think we'd better get out of here, Adamant.
Adamant nodded quickly and gestured for Danielle to come and join him. Danielle, Medley, and Roxanne joined him in the hall. Roxanne had her sword in her hand. She was smiling. Hawk looked away.
It's here.
Hawk moved quickly over to the front door, pulled it open, and looked out. Through the dark, he could see a man in sorcerer's black walking through the grounds, heading for the house. As he passed, the already shriveling garden writhed to the surface and died. The grass withered away. The earth turned to sand and blew away. The sorcerer's power hung heavily on the air, like the tension before an approaching storm. Hawk eased the door shut and turned to face the others.
We're in trouble. Wolf's here, and he doesn't look friendly. Mortis, can you handle him? Mortis? Mortis! Blast! That's it. We're getting out of here now. Isabel, take them out the back way. I'll follow as soon as I can.
Why aren't you coming?
Someone's got to slow him down. Now get moving. We haven't much time.
I can't leave you.
You have to. Our job is to keep Adamant alive no matter what. We lost the last man we guarded. I won't let that happen again.
Fisher nodded and led the others back down the hall. Hawk turned to the front door and slammed home the heavy bolts. He considered pushing furniture up against it as a barricade, but he had a strong feeling it wouldn't make any difference.
Mortis! If you're listening, sorcerer, I can use all the help I can get.
Hawk stood back and looked at the door. It had split from top to bottom. As he watched, the wood decayed and fell apart. There in the open doorway stood what remained of the sorcerer wolf. Its face little more than bone now, its grinning teeth yellowed with age. But still, it moved and breathed and lived, and something else lived within it, something hungry. Hawk gripped his axe tightly and backed away from the motionless figure.
Get behind me!
Daniel, get behind me!
At the sound of voices, Hawk realized the others hadn't got very far. He risked a quick glance back over his shoulder, and his heart missed a beat as he saw the dead men filing out of the library. Fisher had only just reached the end of the hall when the first of the dead men lurched out of the library into the hall. It was one of Adamant's men-at-arms. No blood ran from the gaping wounds in the corpse, and its face was dull and empty. But its eyes saw, and it carried a sword in its hand. Another lifeless came out of the door after it, and another. Fisher and Roxanne stood between the dead men and the others, swords at the ready, backing slowly away to give themselves room to fight. And still the dead men came filing out of the library with weapons in their hands. Roxanne stepped forward and brought her longsword across in a sharp, vicious arc that cut clean through the first lifeless neck. The head fell to the floor and rolled away, the mouth working soundlessly. The headless corpse moved restlessly forward, sweeping its sword back and forth. Roxanne sidestepped and cut at the body, and it swayed under the force of the blow, but would not fall. Its sword arced out deceptively quickly, and Roxanne had to retreat a step. Fisher moved in beside her and cut at the lich's leg. It staggered and fell to one knee, but didn't release its hold on its sword. And then the rest of the liches were upon them, and there was nothing but flying steel and the growing army of the walking dead. Hawk raised his axe to strike at the sorcerer, and an invisible force tore the axe from his hands. It spun clattering down the hall, and Hawk ran after it. He knew when he was outclassed. He snatched up his axe and waded into one of the liches from behind, severing its spine. It fell to the floor and tried to crawl forward. Hawk jumped across it and moved among the dead with his axe, and they fell back from the sheer force of his attack. Medley seized the moment to move in beside Roxanne, his sword at the ready.
You've got to get Adamant out of here. He's the important one. The guards and I can hold these things off long enough to give you a good start.
But what about you?
I don't matter.
You matter to me!
Adamant had drawn his sword and Danielle had her dagger. But even with their help, the little group was still driven back down the hall toward the waiting sorcerer. The dead men wouldn't stop, no matter how badly they were injured. They just kept pressing forward, swinging their swords, even if they had to crawl and drag themselves along the floor to do it. Adamant swung his sword in short, efficient arcs. Even though he knew the faces that clustered before him, they had been his men, sworn to his service. Some of them had even been friends. They died because they sided with him, and now he had to kill them again.
Be ready. I'm going to use my magic to cancel out wolves. When I give you the word, kill him. You'll have to be quick. He's become very powerful. I can't hold him more than a moment or two. If I wasn't already dead, I think I might be frightened. I never thought to see the abomination rise again. Now, Hawk, do it now!
Hawk drew back his arm and threw the axe with all his strength. It flew down the hall and buried itself in Wolf's skull. The sorcerer staggered back a pace under the impact and then fell to one knee. His head slowly bowed as though the weight of the axe was dragging it down. The liches froze in their tracks and then slumped to the floor and didn't move again. Wolf fell forward and lay still. Hawk hesitated a moment, unable to believe it was all over, and then walked forward to stand over the fallen sorcerer. He put his boot on the skull, reached down, and pulled the axe free. One look at the jagged wound was enough to convince him that the sorcerer was dead. No one could have survived a wound like that. And then the body began to twitch. Hawk backed away quickly. Wolf's body shook and trembled and convulsed, the limp arms and legs flapping wildly. The black robe stretched and tore, and the dead sorcerer's body split apart like some monstrous chrysalis. And out of the broken body blossomed the abomination, drawing substance from the dead sorcerer to form a new body that was closer to its own nature. It filled the hall, its bony head brushing the ceiling. Its face was all mouth and teeth, and its muscles glistened wet around the misshapen bones. Its twisted arms ended in footlong claws. It stood like a man, but there was nothing human in it. It was hungry.
Free! Free!
I think we're in trouble.
You might just be right.
Everyone start backing away. Maybe we can outrun the bastard.
Stuff that! I'm going to kill it!
The abomination surged forward, covering the space between them with impossible speed. The small group stood together and braced themselves to meet it. In the laundry room, the trapdoor suddenly blew open, shattering its hinges and flinging the pieces aside. Down in the darkness of the cellar, something stirred. And then slowly, one step at a time, the dead man came up the stairs and out into the light. Mortis stood as little more than a shriveled husk by now. But his power was upon him, rippling the air around him like a heat haze. He moved purposefully toward the door, his cold body steaming in the warmth of the laundry room. Hawk and Fisher fought side by side, keeping the abomination at bay with the sheer energy of their attack. Their blades struck the being again and again, but it did no harm, the steel ringing harmlessly from its hide as though it were armored. Roxanne threw herself at the abomination again and again. Adamant and Medley protected Danielle as best they could, but all of them knew the being was only toying with them. Soon it would grow tired of its game and let its hunger run free, and then all the steel in the world wouldn't be enough to save them. They fought on anyway. There was nothing else to do. The abomination spun around suddenly, ignoring its attackers to stare down the hall. Mortis grinned back at it. The Lord of the Gulfs cocked its awful head to one side, and a voice burned in all their minds like a red-hot iron sinking into flesh.
You cannot save them. I am free. I walk the world again. Neither the living nor the dead can stop me. This was promised me at my creation.
I am neither living nor dead. I'm both. Goodbye, James. Doctala Morte!
An unnatural fire roared up around Mortis, consuming him. The abomination screamed and turned to flee. Mortis gestured sharply with one burning arm, and a fireball shot down the hall to engulf the being. It fell to the floor, tearing at its own flesh as it strove to put out the flames. Mortis strode unsteadily down the hall, already half consumed by the flames, and embraced the being in his burning arms. They were both gone. The hall was still and quiet once again. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and put away their weapons. Adamant and Medley did the same.
Where did they go?
Roxanne padded down the hall, glaring about her, and only then reluctantly put away her sword. Adamant looked somberly at the wide scorch mark on the floor that was all that remained to show where Mortis and the abomination had been destroyed.
Rest easy, my friend. Maybe now you'll find some peace.
At the sound, they all spun around and drew their weapons. The council messenger standing in the open doorway looked at the leveled blades.
I could always come back later. I'm sorry. We've had a rather trying day. What can I do for you?
I bear greetings and salutations from the council. The election's over. You won. Congratulations. Can I go now?
Adamant smiled and nodded, and the messenger disappeared at speed. Adamant turned and looked at the others.
I always thought it would mean more. I've paid a high price in friends and lives for this moment. And now I'm not even sure it's worth it.
Of course it's worth it. You didn't fight this election for yourself. You fought it for the poor and the scared and the helpless who couldn't fight for themselves. They believed in you. Are you going to let them down?
No. You're right, Stefan. The battle's over.
But the war goes on.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
I wonder if Hardcastle got a message too.
If he did, I hope the messenger's quick on his feet.
At Brimstone Hall, the silence was deafening. The messenger had delivered the election results written down on a scroll, thus ensuring he had time to get away before the storm broke. Hardcastle looked disbelievingly at the parchment in his hands. He didn't need to read it out. His expression was enough. People put down their plates and glasses, and one by one they began to leave. Hardcastle snapped out of his daze, stepped forward and prepared to speak.
I'll win them back. I always do.
My friends!
But this time the crowd reacted to his usual mixture of boasts and threats with sullen glances and open anger.
How much more,
show me, you windbag!
How about some of this?
Somebody else threw something. The crowd became an angry mob, pushing and shoving. Fights broke out. Hardcastle was forgotten in the flurry of old grudges and recriminations. He stopped speaking and looked around him with something like horror. They weren't listening. He had lost the election as far as the Conservatives were concerned. That meant he wasn't anybody anymore. He never heard the quiet scuff of steel on leather as Jillian drew the knife from its hidden sheath. The first he knew of it was when she plunged it into his back again and again. Adamant was throwing another victory party, and everyone who was anyone was there. He hadn't really felt like it, but his superiors insisted. With reform now holding the high steps, the council was under reform control for the first time in its history, as long as they were careful not to upset the independents. The party filled the main dining hall and spilled over into adjoining rooms. There, a huge buffet and a dozen different kinds of highly alcoholic punch comprised the refreshments. The noise was deafening. All the movers and shakers from both the reform and conservative causes attended to meet the new counselor and jockey for position. The Brotherhood of Steel provided a small army of men-at-arms to ensure the party's security, for which Hawk and Fisher felt grateful. It meant they could finally relax and get some serious drinking done after a long day. Adamant and Danielle stood together, arm in arm, smiling at everyone. They seemed thoroughly reconciled, though whether that was just for public consumption remained open to question. Personally, Hawk thought they'd make it. He witnessed the way Danielle shielded Adamant with her own body when Roxanne led the attack against him. If it hadn't been for Mortis's magic, she'd have died out there on the streets. Both of them knew it.
They'll make it.
Speaking of Roxanne, Hawk let his gaze wander across the crowd, and there she was, towering over everyone, with an arm draped comfortably across Medley's shoulders. Everyone gave her plenty of room, but she seemed to be behaving herself. Officially, Hawk was supposed to arrest her on sight, but he wasn't in the mood. Roxanne and Medley were leaving Haven first thing the next morning, and he'd settle for that. If his superiors didn't like it, they could go after her themselves.
I'll send flowers to their funerals.
Hawk looked at Isabel, standing beside him, lost in her own thoughts, and smiled fondly.
Well, Isabel, what do you think of democracy in action now that you've seen it up close?
Looked much like any other form of politics to me. Corruption and scandal and a sprinkling of honest men. I know what you want me to say, Hawk. You want me to get all excited because reform won this one. But take a look around you. The big men from both sides are already getting together and making deals.
Yes, Isabel, but the difference here is in what the reformers are making deals about. The deals they make are for other people's benefit, not their own.
Fisher put her arm in Hawk's. All around them, the chatter of guests deciding the future filled the hall.
Maybe. In the meantime, let's count our blessings. Adamant is still alive, so are we, and Haven got through the election without civil war.
Yeah. Not a bad day's work.
Hawk and Fisher, Winner Takes All, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1991, Simon R. Green, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Eric Messner, Yasmin Toison, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Scott McCormick, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Lily Beacon, Tony Nam, Jeff Allen, James Konacek, Christopher Sheeran, Dylan Lynch, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Dan Sondak. If you enjoyed Hawk and Fisher, be sure to look for E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth series, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in Graphic Audio.
I am Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. All the pieces will be put into play. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. A new darkness will rise. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. I will do justice and love mercy. The final battle will threaten all the world. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down. And only Kyler can stand in the way of the Krull.
There's no way to win except to raise these monsters. It will be an orgy of death.
Then let us raise monsters.
The end is nigh. Find out where all the pieces fall in Beyond the Shadows, Parts 1 and 2. Available in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.